Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the abuse excuse when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider. An insider like John Swinton, for instance, who said, because Swinton, remember, was a guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who didn't know John Swinton, nor the press, offered a toast to the independent press, and Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now, you know it and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. And he went on to say, I am paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with. And others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes, and we're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings, and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Well, you know, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program, this New World Order. The men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend it's time for us to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, and preachers and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order, this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000 and Bible prophecy and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free 4-hour compact disc package? Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? The Abuse Excuse is a book written by Alan Dershowitz, a radical, flaming, liberal law professor at Harvard University. Ordinarily, I don't pick up much in the way of liberal philosophy, but Alan Dershowitz is somewhat of an exception. And that's because his brain functions. Now, I think his brain is functioning down the wrong path in liberal philosophy, but then that's my perspective or my view. But the man does have a unique insight in law that I think is instructive for all of us. You can learn a little something from everybody. So if you think I've jumped the tracks of sanity here by reporting on a liberal, a flaming liberal, not just a liberal, this is a flaming liberal college professor, sit back and relax and let's take a look at what the other side is saying about some of the things that you and I hold near and dear. For instance, when we're talking about censorship, or prior restraint. What do you think about government coming in and telling you what you can read or not read? I mean, you know, there's stuff out there that you probably ought not to read. Pornography is a good example, or evolutionary philosophy, or maybe some other kind of perversion or witchcraft or something like that. But who sits at the controls or sits at the throttle and decides what it is that you should or should not read or you should or should not hear? And that's what the crux of the First Amendment's all about. And this thing of government censoring, not only is it government that censors, but it's also newspapers and magazines and police departments and it's lawyers and other individuals who have agendas to fulfill. So let's take a look at some insights into this thing called censorship. Now, People magazine, some years back, did an article, and Alan Dershowitz took exception to the content of the article because the article was factually incorrect. They had made some factual misstatements in the article. Now, as a reporter myself, I can tell you that I have given out a number of interviews to other journalists. And my experience has been, when I read the article after somebody has interviewed me, I've never once seen an article. I've always said, who in the hell gave that interview? That couldn't have been me. I didn't say that. And things are ascribed to me that I said this and I said that, or I believe this or I believe that, or I'm espousing this or I'm espousing that, and I didn't do any of the above. And furthermore, it wasn't a mistake on my part or on the part of the interviewer. I mean, I plainly said no, and he wrote yes. I plainly say I didn't do that, and he says Gordon did it. Now, that's a part and parcel with censorship, because it's a misrepresentation of the truth, and that's what censorship is all about. There's truth out there, and I want to report it, and somebody says, well, we don't want those people to know that. So the press will tell you a truth or a true part of a story, but they don't tell you the rest of the story. That's just as deceptive. That's just as much censorship. Now, during wartime, censorship is accepted as a part and parcel with a necessity. I remember during World War II that there were censors. You could write a letter home, and my dad and my Uncle Carol would write letters home, and there would be black spots in the letter, lines that were blacked out. And every letter that my dad wrote home from the Philippine Islands had to be submitted to a censor, and then the censor, he would take the letter and he would censor out. He'd read the letter, and then he would black out that which he determined that we here in the United States should not know about what's going on over in the Philippines. Now, how do you like that? Well, during wartime, we accept that because, well, my dad might have inadvertently said something that if some spy got a hold of would aid the enemy. And, you know, so that could well be the case. But what about People magazine writing an article about a criminal case? Listen to this. Now that automated informational retrieval systems have all but replaced manual library research, it is more important than ever for newspapers and magazines to correct their errors. Because if they do not, these errors, which can damage reputations and subvert the truth, will quickly become part of the conventional wisdom and be repeated over and over by other newspapers and magazines. Now, recently I encountered a remarkable instance of journalistic arrogance and irresponsibility that warrants recounting. In the August 10th, 1992 issue of People magazine, it featured a story on celebrities who are serving time in prison. And after each celebrity's name, the magazine listed the offense for which he or she had been imprisoned. Now, one of the celebrity inmates was my client, Michael Milken, and the offense listed for Michael Milken was insider trading. And as soon as I saw the article, I called People magazine and I advised them of their mistake. And I told them that Michael Milken had not been convicted of insider trading, but rather he had pleaded guilty to other less serious violations. Now, the government had initially alleged that he had committed insider trading, but the charge was unfounded, and Milken vigorously denied the charge. The trial judge gave the government ample opportunity to prove its allegation of insider trading at Milken's pre-sentence hearing, but the government came up short. And the judge concluded that she was unable to find that Michael Milken had traded on insider information, and she refused to consider that allegation when she sentenced him for the other lesser offenses. Now, the bottom line is this, and that is Michael Milken is innocent of insider trading, and he is now finishing up his 2-year prison sentence, reduced recently from 10 years, for a handful of technical violations which the judge found caused a total loss of $318,086. People magazine was simply in error when it said that Michael Milken's offense is insider trading. And it was a serious error, since insider trading is a far more culpable crime than are the offenses for which Milken is serving his sentence. Now, several days after I advised People of their mistake, People's lawyer called me and he acknowledged that they had indeed made an error. And People magazine's lawyer told me, however, that after an extensive staff discussion, the decision had been made not to correct and not to retract the error. Nor would they even print a letter from me or anyone else setting the record straight. The reason the lawyer gave me was even more appalling than the decision itself. He said to me that since People is not the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, the readers of People magazine do not expect the kind of precision or the kind of accuracy expected of financial or legal journals. In other words, People magazine's own lawyer was defending that publication's error by arguing that People's readers expect imprecise, inaccurate, and flat-out false information, just like the readers of the National Enquirer and other Elvis Weds alien tabloids. Now, I wonder if People magazine's readers will agree to this insulting assessment of their expectations when they read People magazine. Now, their lawyer's second reason for refusing to correct the record was even more dangerous, and he told me that since Milken had originally been charged with insider trading, it was no big deal for People to list that as his offense. In other words, at People magazine, if you're being charged with a crime, is the journalistic equivalent of being convicted of that crime, even if the judge, after hearing days of testimony, has declared the person not guilty. Well, then let me ask, why do we need judges or juries when we have People magazine editors to determine guilt or innocence for us? You know, that's the question that I'm sure the People lawyer must be asking. Nor is People the only arrogant and irresponsible media giant that refuses to correct its errors. Now, People magazine made its mistake because it copied other media accounts which had similarly confused what Michael Milken had been charged with and what he is actually serving his sentence for. And therein lies the danger of perpetrating falsehoods in our age of automated informational retrieval systems. Because once a mistake has been made, it remains a mistake, and it is widely accessed and computerized in databases, just waiting to be spit out to those unwary researchers who believe that they're receiving facts, not fiction. Thus, any mistake takes on a life of its own, being repeated endlessly with little hope of the truth ever catching up to the lie. Now, there is a relatively simple and inexpensive solution to this recurring problem, but it requires the cooperation of both a responsible media and those who run these retrieval systems. When these errors are documented, as they were in the Milken case, the mistake should immediately be corrected by the newspaper or magazine that published them. And then the corrections and documentations must be made part of the database in the retrieval system. And every time the false information in the original story is retrieved, the correction and the true information would be retrieved along with the original story. And this is not being done today, because if it were, the marketplace of ideas would indeed produce truth, not the kind of imprecise, inaccurate misinformation that People magazine believes that its readers expect. All right, I cannot agree with Mr. Dershowitz more when he says that we have inaccuracies in the press. And these inaccuracies, of course, they cause us to believe and then act in a way that's counterproductive to our own best interest. Now, let me give you an illustration of that. The other day I was on a talk radio show with another radio talk show host. The guy's name is Randy Yarborough, as a matter of fact. And some lady called in and she said, "Have you heard about the government confiscating people's food?" Right, now listen to her question. She said, "Have you heard about the people out here, their food is being confiscated by the government?" That's what she'd asked me. And I said, "No, ma'am, I never heard of such a thing." And she said, "Well, let me read you this article." And she took about 5 minutes and she read the article that she had from someplace, I don't know where it was. But I got a copy of an article sent in by a listener, and it's entitled "SWAT Team Conducts Food Raid in Rural Ohio." And I hadn't heard that. Now, we had been talking about food preservation and preparing now for a famine in the United States. So if you're a new listener and you hadn't heard that story before, I have been telling people for a long time that I expect famine here in the United States. I know that's a contrarian view and it's kind of crazy and off the wall, and you probably don't believe that. And I took my information from Deuteronomy. That's a book in the Bible, the scriptures. In Deuteronomy chapter 28, and there's a section in there that talks about famine. And so I extrapolated that out, and over the years, you know, the last 25, 30 years, my conclusion is that the United States is going to end up in a great famine, not just us, but the world as a whole. And so as a result of that, I reported on that. I have done that many times on this program. And this lady evidently had heard me say that, and I was talking about that on Yarborough's program. And we had touched on it, and this lady called in. She said, "Have you heard about the government confiscating this food?" In other words, did you know that the government is just knocking people's doors down and coming in and taking their food stores that they have stored up? This is important for all of you Mormons out there because, you know, you people have been storing food for, you know, at least 100 years, maybe 150 years. Brigham Young, you know, back in 1850, said you people needed a 7-year supply. And then over time, it got watered down to a 4-year supply, then 2 years, and then 1 year. And the last time I heard, it was 3 days. But nevertheless, even your 3-day supply may be in danger because government agents are just lurking around the corners waiting, you know, to come out there and knock your door down and to take your 3-day supply. Now, I hadn't heard this, and so this is a story that the lady, and I'm going to give you the story because as we're progressing along here, let's take a look at censorship, because censorship is inaccurate information. It's taking the information that you have, and we're not going to let you see it. Now, this is a case where we're going to let you see this information, but the information is false. Now, boys and girls, it is true that a SWAT team did conduct a food raid in rural Ohio, but it doesn't have anything to do with taking your four-year supply of food that you've put in your pantry over here to prepare for a rainy day. Nothing. But this lady thought it did. And she made that report over national radio and international radio. Hell, that Yarbrough program goes out on the internet, you know, around the world. And so if you're living in Tanzania or maybe Tasmania or Australia or New Zealand and you heard that Randy Yarbrough program, you know, you might be sitting there saying, oh my God, in the States, the police are out knocking people's doors down and stealing their food. Which is not true at all. That's not the case. But listen to the article. There's two of them. Here's a short article. It says, Ohio authorities stormed a farmhouse in LaGrange Monday, December the 1st, to execute a search warrant, holding that Jacqueline and John Stowers and their son and daughter and young grandchildren at gunpoint for 9 hours. And during the raid, the Ohio Department of Agriculture and police confiscated over $10,000 worth of food, computers, and cell phones. The Stowers' crime? Well, they run a private members-only food co-op. So let me underline that for you. The Stowers now are operating a private member-only food co-op. While state authorities were looking for evidence of illegal activities, the family was not informed as to what crime they were suspected of. They were not read their rights or allowed to make a phone call. The children, some as young as toddlers, were traumatized by armed officers interrogating the adults with guns drawn. The Morning Journal, a newspaper serving northern Ohio, reported that the Stowers were believed to be operating without a license. However, the Stowers claim that the food co-op they run does not engage in any activities that would require state licensing. Friends of the Stowers openly question why such aggressive tactics were necessary to investigate a licensing complaint. The Ohio Department of Agriculture has apparently been chastised by the courts in previous cases for overreach, including entrapment of an Amish man, to sell raw milk, which backfired when it became known that the man gave milk instead of selling it to a state undercover agent, refusing to take money for what he believed to be a charitable act. The Amish literally interpret the gospel of Matthew 5, verse 42, to give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. The matter has been forwarded to the Lorain County Prosecutor's Office and the Lorain County General Health District, according to Lorain County court records. Now, that comes from Spiker, dated 12-15-08. Now, remember, this event transpired on December 1st of 08, and so there's a little short report. Now, there's a longer report. I'm not going to give you the whole long report, but it's entitled, The SWAT Team Conducts a Food Raid in Rural Ohio. Let me give you the first paragraph. It says, on Monday, December 1st, a SWAT team with semi-automatic rifles entered the private home of the Stowers family in LaGrange, Ohio, herded the family in or onto the couches in the living room, and then kept guns trained on the parents, the children, the infants, and toddlers from approximately 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. The team was aggressive and belligerent. The children were quite traumatized. At some point, the bad cop SWAT team was relieved by another team called the good cop team that tried to befriend the family. The Stowers family has run a very large, well-known food cooperative called Manna Storehouse on the western side of the greater Cleveland area for many years. And there were agents from the Department of Agriculture present. One of them, identified as Bill Leschel, and the search warrant is reportedly suspicious looking. Agents began rifling through all of the family's possessions, a task that lasted hours and resulted in a complete upheaval of every private area in their home. Many items were taken and were not listed on the search warrant. The family was not permitted a phone call. They were not told what crime they were being charged with, and they were not read their rights. Over $10,000 worth of food was taken, including the family's personal stock of food for the coming year. Now, I'm going to underline that one. Stock of food for the coming year, including the family's personal stock of food. All of their computers and all of their cell phones were taken, as well as the phone and contact records. The food cooperative was virtually shut down, and there was no rational explanation or justification for this extreme violation of constitutional rights. Okay, that's enough for our purposes here. I'll underline for this extreme violation of constitutional rights. Now let's analyze this paragraph and let's understand something here. This is not the government coming into private homes and taking people's four-year supply of food for an emergency supply. Like you're a Mormon and you have a four-year supply of food for your family, and you have it in your storeroom or in your basement, which millions of people, believe it or not, actually practice. I don't know if you understand this. The average Joe Sixpack out there would probably say, that's insane. Well, then, some people invest their money in stocks and bonds, and I think that's insane. But, you know, that's your choice in life, you know. And so there's a result that comes from your investment in stocks and bonds. Now, how do you like it? Now, other people invest their money in food or clothes or antique automobiles or maybe antique furniture. And sometimes they win and sometimes they lose, depending upon, you know, what you take into Antiques Roadshow. But here's the moral to the story. Remember, the lady reports to me. She says, "Have you heard about this?" And I said, no, I hadn't heard about it. Now let's analyze this in its context. This is the government coming out and raiding a co-op. This is a business. They came out and raided a business. And they're raiding the business because they're alleging this business doesn't have a business license and they're doing business with the general public. Now, you may believe that needing a business license or the government requiring you to have a business license violates your rights. Or you may believe that these people don't need a business license. Or you may believe that business licenses are just nonsense or whatever. That's fine. You're entitled to your beliefs. But, you know, there's a law there that requires it if you're dealing with the general public. Now, I operate a law school here and I don't have a license. But I'm not open to the public. Now, these people may not be open to the public either. That's something to be decided in the trial. You know, that's if the guy doesn't need a license and his position is, I'm not engaged in anything for which I might need a license. And the government says, well, we think he is. That's the controversy, and that's why we have a judicial system, and that's why we have trials. Did you know that? The purpose for a trial is to determine who's right and who made an error. Now, statistically, 85% of the time, the government is right and the alleged victim is wrong, and 15% of the time, the government makes a mistake. So it isn't unheard of, and the government may have made a mistake in this case. This guy may be operating a co-op called Manna Storehouse, which is not open to the general public, which is totally private. And if it is, and he comes in and makes his defense, he'll be exonerated, and that'll be the end of it. But here's the point I'm making. This lady said to me, "Have you heard that the government's coming in taking your food?" Now, the subject matter that I was talking about wasn't commercial food operations. The government can come into Kroger's or Safeway or Walmart or to the Manna Storehouse, and they can investigate its contracts or lack of a contract. Now, when we come back from our break, we'll analyze this paragraph over here because oftentimes people have a misconception as to what the government's requirements are. Like, they weren't read their rights and they were held at gunpoint. What was that all about? And I'll tell you when we come back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, that's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements and recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or the publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about a book review. Let's take a look at the name of the book. It's called The Abuse Excuse. The Abuse Excuse, first published about 1994 or 95. Price at that time, according to the jacket here, was $22.95. I'll bet you could probably get this book right now at your local bookstore. The author is Alan M. Dershowitz. Alan Dershowitz. I think it's a dynamite book. Now, there are some articles in here that I take exception with, and I'm not going to report on those. And you can read the book for yourself, and you can decide what's a good public policy or what you agree with or what you don't. I'm impressed with Alan Dershowitz's candor and his honesty. I don't agree with his conclusions. I don't agree with a lot of his beliefs and practices over here. But as a law school professor and a practicing attorney at that, he practices before the Supreme Court and argues constitutional issues, and I admire him. And many of his positions I wholeheartedly support as a libertarian. But his conclusions on a lot of things like pornography and other filth and one thing and another is an abortion and one thing and another is something else. But nevertheless, I think his logic and his reasoning is certainly worth listening to. You might not agree with it, but it's certainly worth listening to. Now, remember, the argument that he's making here deals in the section of the book is talking about censorship. Well, censorship is false information. It's withholding information. That's what we think of in censorship. But listen, disseminating false information is also censorship, because It promotes an agenda. And I'm going to show you that as we progress along here. It promotes somebody's agenda by causing you to believe a lie. They're not telling you the truth. They're not telling you the whole story. They're withholding from you the rest of the story. Now, this lady, when she read this story, she read a story to me, and I listened to it, and I thought, my God, can this be happening in America? Well, it could at some point in time. It happened in World War II. I mean, we had rationing, food rationing in World War II. And I imagine there were some people that broke the food rationing laws, and then the government came in and took all their food because they broke the law. But that's not what's going on in America today as I speak, and it may happen in the future. I'm not here to tell you that it'll never happen in America. It's probably happened here before and will happen again. And you'll have to take some kind of evasive action to protect your food. Ever stop and think about that? That's for you, you know, wild minority of people out there that might have some food stocks stocked up. But now, let me go through this again. On Monday, December the 1st, a SWAT team with semi-automatic rifles entered the private home of the Stowers family in LaGrange, Oregon, herded the family onto the couches in the living room, and kept guns trained on the parents, children, infants, and toddlers from approximately 11 a.m. to 8 p.m., period. Okay, there's your first opening statement. What's the purpose behind that? It's terrorism. That's the purpose behind it. A SWAT team is designed to instill terror. It's to scare the living hell out of you. Right? Now, that's the purpose behind it. There isn't any need. These people are Amish. The Amish people are pacifists. And the SWAT team, before they went out to execute this warrant, had been briefed. They knew the layout of these people's home. They knew how big the home was in square footage. They knew whether the house was paid for or it was being paid for on a mortgage. They had all of the information and more information than you people could even dream of. They went into a briefing session. A SWAT team, you know, is made up of five or six people. Highly trained, skilled, trained killers. Every one of them. Probably recruited from the military, special forces, or something on that order. Now, these people, the SWAT team, they're just doing their job. Terrorizing people is their job. What you really wanted was, well, who was the little, bald, fat, bespeckled bureaucrat who ordered this raid? That's the real culprit. And what was the purpose behind the raid? It was to stifle. It was to end competition against Kroger and Safeway and Walmart. Remember, this guy is operating Mana Storehouse. He's operating a food co-op. He is selling food to people cheaper than they can buy it at Walmart. Walmart doesn't want that. That's the purpose for licensing. That's the purposes for government regulation and control. It's to control trade, commerce, business, and industry under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution. So, you know, when the SWAT team comes in with their guns drawn and they have little kids sitting on the couch and they're traumatizing the children, that is to send a message to the mother and father, you better quit doing this. That's the purpose behind it. Okay, now with that much out of the way, the team was aggressive and belligerent. Well, that's their job. These Amish people are not a threat to anybody. Hell, they don't even have guns. They're pacifists. Don't you understand that? The SWAT team knew that before they ever walked in the door. So the purpose for all of the guns and all the belligerents over here is to terrorize this family. Why do we want to terrorize them? We want them to quit selling food to people cheap so that they'll go out and pay a higher price for it in the licensed, bonded, and insured food warehouse of the government, Walmart, Kroger, and Safeway. Now, that's why we're doing this. That's the purpose behind it. The children were, quite traumatized, and at some point the bad cop SWAT team was relieved by another team called the good cop SWAT team and tried to befriend the family. Okay, now these SWAT teams, now these are trained professionals. They're trained in criminology, and they're trained to get confessions out of people. And so this is a technique or a tactic that is used to get these people to lower their guard and to admit that they're selling food to people and don't have a license. And so it can be used against them in court so they can be convicted and prosecuted successfully and then punished and put out of business. That's the purpose behind it. Now, if these people had been trained themselves, then they would have shut up and not said anything to anybody for any cause or reason. The controversy has already been undertaken by the SWAT team when they came into the house with guns drawn. That began the controversy that can now only be settled in a court of law. There isn't any talking to the police that's going to change or dissuade them from their course of action. They have already committed themselves. And there isn't anything that you can say that's going to change their minds. And anything that you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. All right, now, what about this rights thing? Now, the Stowers family has run a very large, well-known food cooperative called Manna Storehouse on the western side of the greater Cleveland area for many years. Now, if they were doing that, that's period right there. Now, if they were doing that, and they're not open to the public, and they're doing it under contract, and they're doing it in gold and silver coin, they probably don't need a license. But you know, there's a number of do's and don'ts when you're in private business, and there's a number of do's and don'ts when you're in public business. I don't know if these people are operating a public business for which they need a license or a private business for which they don't. And I'm not sure that the government does either. But the government thinks they're running a public business for which they need a license, and that's why they were there. Now, there were agents from the Department of Agriculture present. That's a federal agency. Now, they also, many states have a Department of Agriculture, so it could be that it was just a state operation totally and that the feds weren't in on it at all. I can't tell from here. It would appear that the federal Department of Agriculture is involved, but it may not be. One of them identified as Bill Leshow. Okay, he's from the Department of Agriculture. And the search warrant is reportedly suspicious looking. It's reported suspicious looking. Okay. Well, how many of you people out there have ever seen a search warrant? Huh? When was the last time you saw a search warrant? Now, if you're the average Joe Sixpack, you have never seen a search warrant in your whole damn life. You wouldn't know what the hell a search warrant looked like if I slapped you across the face with one. So how in the hell could you tell me it's suspicious looking? You know, that's just editorial license over there. I happen to know what a search warrant looks like. I've seen more than one. And I know how they're executed and one thing or another. And so I could look at it and say, gee, this could be a suspicious-looking search warrant. Well, a search warrant that's issued in California is going to look different than one that's served by the federal government in Tallahassee, Florida, or something different than it's going to be served in Ohio or North Dakota. So the fact that they're different doesn't make them suspicious. And they're signed by a judge. They articulate reasonable probable cause, and then it has to be signed. There has to be an affidavit in support of it. There's a process that you go through. Now, it could be that this search warrant is deficient, and that needs to be challenged. I don't deny that. But for the reporter here to report that the search warrant was suspicious, okay, but that's not accurate reporting. Who was the person who reported that it was sufficient, that it was suspicious, or that it was deficient? Was it the family attorney who, after reviewing the search warrant, determined that it was suspicious? Because why? It did not have a judge's signature from that judicial district. Oh, now that would be suspicious. Yeah, that would be a deficiency. All right, now going on. The agents began rifling through all of the family's possessions. Well, look, if they came into your house and they're looking for something, wouldn't they have to look through all of your possessions to see if it was there? So when they come into your house, they're going to go into your closet and they're going to look through all of the pockets of all of your clothes, looking for whatever it is they're looking for. They're going to go into every room in your house while they're executing this warrant. So they're looking for, and in this case, they're looking for records and bills of lading and such things, receipts and so on, and mailing lists and customer lists and one thing or another. And so they're going to do that. So just make up your mind to that. That's part of the search process. All right? Now, a task that lasted hours and resulted in a complete upheaval of every private area of their home. Well, excuse me, folks, but when you're executing a search warrant, did you think that they were just going to come into the laundry room and maybe look over the washer and dryer and leave? Come on, guys, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. If the police come in and they've got a search warrant and they're looking for evidence of a crime, they come into the home. They're going to look throughout the home, in the attic, in the basement, in every room, in every bureau, in every closet. Many items were taken that were not listed on the search warrant. Okay. Let's suppose that they came in with a search warrant and they're looking for records and books of a potential crime. That's what's listed on the search warrant. In the process, they discover an Uzi submachine gun in the closet. Maybe they discover some marijuana, heroin, cocaine. Maybe they discover some evidence that this guy is a spy for the Russians. Did you believe, or do you believe, that if they found this obvious contraband in the house that they would leave it because it's not mentioned on the search warrant? Huh? Honest to God, do you believe that? What planet do you come from? Come on, wake up here. Now, it may be that they took some things that weren't on the search warrant. And when they do that, they're supposed to give you a receipt for everything that they take. Now, this article does not tell you that they got a receipt for everything the government took. If you ever have a search warrant executed, make sure you ask the officer in charge for a receipt for everything that he's taking. That way you can litigate later those things that need to be returned. Now, oftentimes the cops come in and they take all your guns. This is very common, very common. They'll come in, execute a search warrant, take all of your guns, and then they don't give you your guns back. Why don't they give you your guns back? Because they want to steal them. The police are also thieves. Did you know that? And they use the law to steal from people. It goes on all the time. And then the police department, when they take these guns, there's a process that you have to go through to get your guns back. Most people don't know how to get them back. Hell, most lawyers don't know how to get them back. And so as a result of that, then they're forfeited to the state, and then they auction them off. And then they take the proceeds, and then they buy good little goodies, you know, for the police department. Now, is that a modality of theft? Yeah, it's legalized theft. And the police know that when they take stuff out of your house, you will not know how to get it back. Therefore, it will be forfeited. And when it's forfeited, then they get to keep it and sell it, and then they get the profit that comes from it. Okay. Is that legalized theft? Yeah. Is it wrong? Yeah. Should it be stopped? I think so. Is it an abuse? Yeah. So? Okay, so the world's full of abuses, which is why I'm making this report, which is why I'm steering you on to Dershowitz's book, because Dershowitz is pointing out in this book these same kinds of abuses that are done by government and government agencies, abuses that are carried out by newspapers, defense lawyers, prosecuting attorneys, judges. Dershowitz, radical liberal, pointing out abuses that go on in society that need to be corrected. And so he said People magazine went to a database and took some information and published it. which was false, and that needs to be corrected. I agree with Mr. Dershowitz. I think that's an abuse that needs to be corrected. And People magazine said, screw off, we're not going to fix it. How do you like that? But People magazine isn't the only outfit that does that. I can tell you from personal experience that when you give an interview to a television reporter, television news reporter, or to a newspaper reporter, they're going to lie about you and they're going to make false reports. This is why I very seldom ever give interviews. I used to give interviews and I was in hopes that the reporters, you know, could learn how to do an interview and report the truth, report the facts. But oftentimes the truth and the facts don't make a good story. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make a good gripping story. And so we have to edit it a little bit, and we have to spice it up a little bit, and we have to grit some controversy and some drama into the story so people will read it. Because the truth oftentimes just isn't that exciting. And so we want to make it exciting. And so this story has been written so that it's really exciting, isn't it? But let's take a look. They took over $10,000 worth of food was taken. No, wait a minute. If you went into a health food store and you raided it, do you think maybe you might get $10,000 worth of food? They took all the inventory. They went in here and they said, this business is operating illegally and we're going to confiscate all of the merchandise. That's normal. But they didn't take $10,000 worth of this family's personal food supply. They took their personal food supply. Well, that's an allegation. I don't know if they did or not. Now, if you're running this business out of your home, when they come in here and they take the business food, how in the hell are they going to tell the food that belongs to the business, you know, the food that you're selling to your customers, and your own personal stash that you've got in your pantry? Have you got on a can of Boston baked beans? This is my personal food stash for the famine. Did you write that on every can? How in the hell does the police officer know which food is your personal stash and which is your business inventory? Okay, now guys, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. You know, you make a choice as to operate this business out of your home or to operate it out of a business. You know, this is why people have a store down the street and they get a business license and they operate and sell to the public. Now, that's the normal way to do things. If you don't want to do that and you want to run a private business, you ought to know how to run a private business. You know, if you want to sell milk, the raw milk to the public, hey, you need to have some legal training. You know that? Because, you know, your state government does not want you selling raw milk to the general public out there, even if the general public is a specialized segment of the public that knows and understands what raw milk is and wants to buy it from you. You can't sell it to them. Why? Well, because they're wards of the state. All of you people out there are wards of the state. You can't just go out there selling raw milk to Joe Sixpack walking down the street. He's a ward of the state. He's protected by the state. He has a guardian. You can't do that. It's against the law. Now, I know you don't like that law, and you're going to break the law anyway, but then, you know, there's a consequence that comes from that, and that's what these people are suffering from. There was a complete upheaval of every private area of the home. Many items were taken that were not listed on the search warrant. The family was not permitted a phone call. Why would they be permitted a phone call? They're not under arrest. We're executing a warrant. So since they're not under arrest, they're not entitled to a phone call. Next. And they were not told what crime they were being charged with. That's because they weren't being charged with any crime. And probably to this moment in time, they have not been charged with a crime. We're here executing a search warrant. You're not under arrest. And we're not charging you with any crime. They were not read their rights. Why would we read these people their rights? They're not under arrest. Come on. You don't need to read people their rights when you're serving a search warrant. Now, over $10,000 worth of food was taken, including the family's personal stock of food for the coming year. I just mentioned that. I said, how in the hell does the policeman know what your personal stash is from your business inventory? See where we're going with this? Now, this lady was calling into the Randy Yarbrough show, and Randy Yarbrough is very careful about reporting facts and reporting the truth and being careful. But, you know, you can't control people when they call in. And this lady, more than likely, was very sincere. I'm not questioning her sincerity. But she was reading what we call hearsay. A newspaper article is not admissible in trial. Did you know that? Why? It's hearsay. Hell, there isn't a court in the country that would accept a newspaper article in evidence. And that's because, hell, everybody knows that newspaper articles are suspect from the get-go. And I've just shown you in the first paragraph of this longer article, it's a two-page story, the basic errors that are just obvious, right? Stand right out in front of you. It makes for a good story, and if you're not trained in law, you repeat this story, and that's what this lady did. Did you know that the police came in and stole these people's food? They didn't steal it. They came in and executed a warrant. You know, that's the way life is. Now, if the police come here, knock on my door, and say, hey, I got a search warrant here, and we're going to come into your house, it's going to be a god-awful disruption of your life. That's true. I don't deny it. But that's the way life is. That's why we have search warrants. As opposed to the police just coming in and doing their search without a warrant, at least there is a remedy. These people have a remedy available. They can challenge everything the police took. They can get back everything that the police took, if, in fact, they're innocent. Now, if these people are operating a business and they don't have a license, well, then, you know, they're breaking the law, aren't they? Now, I operate a business, but my business is private, and I'm not open to the public, and so I've been here for 25 years. The police have never given me any problems at all. Do you think the police know that I operate a law school without a license? Hey, now let me tell you, they know more about me than I know about myself. You can rest assured that when the police went out there, they knew more about that family than that family knew about themselves. And that was a carefully orchestrated and designed terrorist operation for the express purpose of putting them out of business. Now that's the abuse that ought to be attacked. That's the abuse that ought to be reported on. And that's the abuse that is not being reported on in this article. They're telling us lies when they could tell the truth and be a hell of a lot more effective. And actually what this is a censored article to send us down a rabbit trail, believing that the police are out here stealing your private food supplies. No, they're not. They're terrorizing families into getting licenses and coming under government control when they probably don't want to and don't need to and ought not to. That's the abuse. And these people need some legal education. And that's why we're here. And that's why we're reporting on the abuse excuse by Alan M. Dershowitz. Yeah, I'm about out of time here again, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log, schedule, and archives, all of which can be accessed through our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.